Hello, welcome to The Lore You Know, a show where we chat with some amazing human beings who are storytellers, collectors, and folklorists as we discuss the history of, inspiration behind, and importance of recording and sharing regional tales. Today I have with me Brian Seach, who, if you've watched any of our STM stuff, you should be familiar, especially our YouTube audience. Brian, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, I was looking forward to it.
So for the people that maybe haven't seen you on, Sasquatch on Earth. If people haven't seen you on Sasquatch on Earth, which you've been on both the Chestnut Ridge and Mountain State Monsters. But for people who haven't seen you yet, could you do a brief introduction of your connection to the world of weird?
Sure. First, I'd like to say thank you to all the, to you, Seth and Courtney and everybody, Mark Maskey, everybody for inviting, me and my wife on the last one, the West Virginia one, and for having me on the Ridge. We really appreciate that. That's really cool that we were given an opportunity to do that. So we're grateful to you guys. You guys are awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sure.
So just, I guess a little bit about me. So my wife and I have always been interested in the paranormal and Bigfoot and things like that. Even growing up, I was a child of the 70s, so I would watch Leonard Nimoy and In Search Of and all the documentaries. And I'm a big sci-fi monster geek. Just went to see Godzilla Minus One a couple of days ago and loved it. Just growing up, I researched all that stuff. And when I met my wife, I found out that she was interested also. So we formed our first group, which was called Center for Unexplained Events, which we still have now. She kind of runs that. I run CCS. And the first group, we kind of made up. We wanted to be a generic term because we didn't want to say Pennsylvania Center for Unexplained Events, because now look, it's like, hey, we're from West Virginia now, right? So
right.
We wanted to be able to put in that tag of a state or wherever we were going to go. So we basically started Q kind of like, and you were at our house, Seth was at our house, you saw our files, you looked through some of our files. We set it up kind of like a, we wanted to collect newspaper articles, magazines, anything, books, documentaries, DVDs, to save and archive all of the unknown and also to investigate and research the unknown. So in 2012, we formed our other group, which is CCS, which that's the shirt I'm wearing in both of your both of the documentaries, Center for Cryptozoological Studies. We felt just under Q. We weren't getting the kind of the cryptid reports that we wanted. So we just formed the other group, CCS2, and I'm in charge of that. Terry's in charge of the other one. So it's been a godsend that people love our logo, and they are coming to us with reports. So we're kind of glad that we did that, even though we have two separate groups.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody has a sighting or something that they want to report, how would they most readily get available or get in touch with you?
You could go to either Facebook page. We have Center for Unexplained Events and also Center for Cryptozoological Studies. And you can message me on there or message Terry on the other one. So and we're always around. You can always go on my Facebook page and message me with some sightings. So that's the basis. We love doing what we do. We're here to research everything, whether it be a UFO report or we just investigated. Oh, I investigated with Fred last Saturday. There was a gentleman claiming he heard what sounded like were wolf screams, long howling wolf screams. He heard one night. Well, I got to go, walk around in the woods. I got to search, and maybe you saw some of the pictures. I got to search this really cool cave, just, right down over the hill. There's a little waterfall going in it. Now, didn't find anything, but it's just so much fun to check out some of these areas because, I'm getting up there in age. I don't know how much longer I'll be able to do this. So I had a blast. I had a blast. Sore the next morning, but I had a blast.
That's part of the fun, though. That's part of the fun.
Exactly. And you've been all over now with Small Town Monsters. And did you ever think you'd be doing that? I mean, it was like, it's so cool that you're able to be doing that. It's, I envy you. You get to go to all these really cool places. I'm stuck in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio.
It is a lot of fun. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. As you mentioned, you were in PA to begin with, and now you're in West Virginia. But to clarify for people that maybe aren't familiar with the geography, you're like right in the Ohio Valley. You're in the panhandle, so you can cover Ohio, PA, and West Virginia really easily, correct?
Yeah, we're like in the northern panhandle. If you like would, you know, just you look at a thing in West Virginia, we're like right up on the tip. And just Ohio's off to the left, PA to the right. And we just call it our the Tri-State Triangle now, because all through there, you know, Beaver County's over here, Columbiana County, Hancock County, where we live, all of them, you know, Bigfoot, UFO, Dogman, you name it, is in the three-state area. And we're starting to progress down into Brook County and more into the Panhandle. And people are telling us their stories now, starting to very slowly. But, I mean, this place is like, you know, my friend Fred calls it Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, because there's so many just stories waiting to just come out here. And it's fun. It's fun. We definitely rejuvenated down here.
That's awesome. So you said you brought up In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy being one of the first introductions to cryptozoology and monsters and so on. Do you recall which monster was your favorite when you were younger?
Oh, it's always been Bigfoot.
It's always been Bigfoot.
Now, of course, it's getting a little bit of the Bigfoot fatigue a little bit too, but it's still always, you know, just researching, you know, when you've been in it like a long time, like we have, and just back in, even in the 70s, people are still seeing things, whether it's in West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania. And when skeptics will say, hey, you know, there's nothing to this, but it's like these sightings continue. They continue in just about every state in the United States and across the world. These hairy ape-like creatures are being seen. So, and remember, it only takes really one, you know, to make it true, right? If you find one, if they can somehow find a body, because I don't advocate killing this thing. I don't. If you find a dead in the woods, then yeah. But I don't want one killed. I think it'll be a very sad day if somebody would shoot it just to prove. And I know a lot of people said that's the only way, but hope maybe you can find a dead one or something. I would just hate for this. I don't want to say legend, because I think it is real to end like that. You know what I mean?
Right, right. No, I completely understand. So Bigfoot and obviously he was the first one, and I can see just by the way that we've been discussing things, is it correct to assume that you are putting him, like Bigfoot, in a flesh and blood camp?
Well, I always tell people that when we research any of the cryptids, and you know, you've seen what we've done and we talked to you what we've done.
Yeah.
I believe you have to start your research that way. You're looking for something that's in the woods, makes tracks, it eats, you know, it poops, it does all this stuff. So you're looking for something that should be there. But there's a lot of questions, and I've always felt, and I've said it many times, missing piece to this puzzle. I don't know. You know, some people said, well, maybe these things are paranormal, interdimensional, quantum, pick your term. They can come in and out. I don't know. And I want to be always honest with people. I says, I'm on the fence. I think there's a missing piece. I'm definitely not smart enough to know what that missing piece is. Okay. I wish I had answers. And I don't want to sound like a cop out, but I like to be honest. And when I give people, I like to be honest about what we do, and what we research, and what we think. Always looking for new ideas, always looking for, like say, you know, say you, for example, maybe you have a theory and stuff you never told anybody, but you bring it out, and then, you know, we could say too, it's like, well, you know, we didn't think of that. That's a good idea. I think you should always keep your options open on what these things are. And because, boy, if we knew more what they are, I think we'd have a lot more proof, don't you? I mean, just being, you know, right. I think we should have a little more proof on some.
Yeah, and speaking of, like, the Center for Unexplained Events. So having that, I would imagine, you know, like you said, you had to start up a second one to get more of the cryptozoology side. But you've seen stories that are paranormal in ufology and cryptozoology, all of that mixed together. Do you see patterns that emerge between all three of those that it would be best sometimes to maybe utilize aspects of each piece to try to fit this puzzle together? Or do you think that there's something to be said to keep everything separate?
I think there are certain overlapping things. Like there are, like there's when people, sometimes when people see these creatures, you know, sometimes they see, which we have started to research, balls of light, spheres of light. Sometimes they see UFOs. Sometimes these things walk and they just disappear. You know, we've done a fair amount of paranormal research too. We haven't done much lately, but I believe you can take some of your paranormal equipment, bring it over to Bigfooting. And I know, like, one of the things we started to do, maybe I'm trying to think, maybe like 10 years ago, is we started to use also infrared occasionally in the day, using infrared in the woods, trying to see if these creatures maybe show up on a different spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I think if you can bring certain aspects of one thing into the other, and I that a lot of this is connected. Again, how, boy, I wish I could tell you. I really wish I could tell you, but I you know, like a gut, you get a gut feeling. You get a gut feeling, right, that some of the, maybe not every single thing, but certain aspects bleed over, and maybe one is part of another, but we just can't get the house of it. You know what I mean? That, you know, a lot of people, you know, there are some people that get into this like in a year or two, and they're an experts and they have all the answers. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe that it's your opinions, but how do you know for sure that say, hey, something is this or something is this? I really, as you know, in life, not everything is, I always say, not everything is black or white. I think the paranormal goes into a gray area where a little bit of each bleeds over. And a lot of people, they don't want to hear that. And I'm sure you look at your podcast here, how you've talked to all these witnesses and authors and researchers. They all have little niches and things that they follow. And we're no different. We're definitely no different in that aspect.
Right, right. There was something that I thought of, and then it just went right out my head.
That happens every day.
I wanted to talk about the S-Files, though. First of all, can you explain what the S-Files are? And two, then why you even started it in the first place? Like, what was the inspiration behind creating this archive?
Well, we like to tease people and say we were Mulder and Scully before there was Mulder and Scully, because we started our Q in 86, actually, and we started collecting right away. It's just, we wanted to get all this stuff together, to document it, archive it, and share it. And you know, we've shared some stuff with you and other researchers, authors. A lot of our stuff gets out there like that. We don't want to be just like the Cancer Man in X-Files, where he goes into this big room and he puts something on his shelf and you never see it again. It's important because we spent a lot of time, money, and effort collecting all this. I don't want to say crap, but it's collecting all this stuff. And believe me, when I tell you, you know, when we say it's been a lifestyle for us, it is. I mean, we go to used bookstores, we go to libraries, you know, we've looked through microfilm. We've done all of these things. And like when you came over a couple months ago, you were like, your eyes were beaming, and it's like, oh, this is what we love to show this off to people. Because we've had a lot of our stuff donated by Dr. Paul Johnson, who we talk about a lot. He's our mentor. And other longtime researcher, Jody Cook, has given us a bunch of things. A lot of researchers, Rick Fisher, love Rick Fisher. He actually came down to our Butler conference, which is, we co-promote that with Dan Hagman. And we got to get you there one day. We got to get you to speak too one day. We got to get you to speak a lot of things, but that's another story. So I mean, like Rick, when he came and he spoke at Butler, it's probably about 5 years ago, brought me down like six. And I think I showed you all the black books with all the old newspaper articles that he got from archived online. A lot of researchers today, if it's not on the internet, it's nothing. And I think what the researchers got to understand, and I know you understand because you've seen it, that there's only a small percentage of the paranormal stuff that's online. I mean, a small person. I mean, we have stuff in there that I probably haven't even looked at for 4 years. And we're trying to look through some more stuff for you too, to get, for your archives. Okay. And I think it's for the newer researchers, I think it's kind of, you know, it's more than just typing something in the internet coming up. It's just, there's so much out there. I mean, there's so many old newsletters, things like that. There's material you can't get, you know.
Yeah. Are there any, the newsletter thing, I really wish there was something current that kind of took that place. Are you aware of any current newsletters that are circulated right now?
Well, most of the stuff, it's like now online. I know Daniel Perez does the Bigfoot Times, which I kind of just stopped getting a couple years ago, but I know that. And really there's no, a lot of it's like online now. It's not the same as getting a hard copy in your hand.
Right.
You know,
getting it mailed to you.
Exactly. I think those days are about long gone, unfortunately. Magazines are, they're harder and harder to find. And like there's one out of England, a 40 Times, and it's like $15 for a magazine. And I'm like, I can't spend $15 for a magazine. I'll get special issues and things like that. But, you know, times 12, do the math. You just can't afford that stuff. The best one, I think, the best one of all time was UFO News Clipping Service. And it was from the 70s to, I think, 90-some. And we probably got about 50 copies of it. Every month, they would get, they would have their UFO newsletter. Or I mean, they would take them right out of the newspaper. They would put them in there for the United States. Then they would go UFO across the world. And then my favorite is they had a, it was called a, it was Fortean, and which also included a lot of cryptid things. And that was always my favorite. I'd go there first. Because we subscribed for probably about 5 years, and it got outrageous and we couldn't do it. But that was, to me, that's the best. And I don't know, sometime next time you come down, we'll show you, I'll dig out some old issues for you. And just phenomenal. It was like about 10 pages a month, but it was just, and it, we actually, I think we actually, towards the end, we actually even sent in some articles for it. Credit you, they would put your name up there and stuff like that. So that's pretty cool.
Right. That is pretty awesome. There is a phrase that I've heard you use just, which I'm sure that it's probably been recorded for Sasquatch on Earth, but I know that it, just in conversation, I've heard you use the phrase, the old guard, when discussing certain researchers. Would you mind giving some space right now to the people that are part of the old guard? So those that are listening that maybe aren't familiar with older researchers or ones that have been in the field for a while, they can start to get these names in their heads so that they're preserved for a little while longer.
Sure. Sure. You know, in cryptozoology, of course, you have Dr. Paul Johnson. We consider ourselves old guard now, and never thought I'd get there, you know. Dr. Paul, Stan Gordon, everybody knows Stan. Rick Fisher, these are all cryptid people. I'm trying to think of some other ones. UFO, there's Rick Hilberg. He's been around a long time. Fred Saluga, obviously. John Ventry's been around, not as long as some of the other ones. Boy, I'm trying to think. I know that there's a ton of them. Well, unfortunately, there's less and less every day because we're getting older. So some of them are passing away. And like, you know, we lost like William Jurgenis. Just the cryptid field has been getting hit hard lately. What was his name? I can't think of his name. There's a bunch right now. My mind's just not up on it. But and you guys
have
done
that's because I put you
job.
On the spot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I'd have known that, man, I would have looked through everything. You know, Daniel Perez, he's been around a long time. He's I would consider him the old guard. And yeah, there's a lot more. Some of them just aren't coming to my head right now. But Jody Cook, sorry, Jody, if you're listening. He's Daniel Hagman. Daniel Hagman, you know, Daniel Hagman, and he's also one of our mentors. I mean, we're lucky. We have Paul Johnson, Daniel Hagman, and Fred Saluga. Those three together have been in it such a long time, and we've learned off them. We've went on cases from them, and that's just experience you can't get. And it's we are blessed to have been able to do this. If somebody would have told me when we first started, we would have relationships with these people and work with them, I just said, no, they're not going to work with like us. We're just starting out just like us. Cause we always like downplay what we do. It's like we put all them on a plateau and then we put us down here. It's kind of like, because they're the ones that we look up to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing that you mentioned, when we were, you know, off air, when we were talking, when I was there to see the S files, you had mentioned seeing over the years, researchers coming into the field. And then, it almost sounds like they burn out after a while, and then just kind of fall off. So for those people that are maybe new to cryptozoology, what would be your advice to avoid burnout like that? There's got to be is there a pattern that you've seen on those people that just come in full force and then they're gone that maybe could best be avoided?
Yeah. Well, I think now that's what we did when we first started. We were with the PA Bigfoot Society at the time, and we would go out with them a lot. We'd take cases and it started to be like all the time. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, I miss this movie. Or why didn't we go out to dinner? Or why didn't we go to the park? We started to miss some of those things. And I think my personal advice to say is, if there was a couple people in this room right now, I would say, listen, you don't have to give up everything. You don't have to go full force Bigfoot 24/7. Have fun, watch a movie, go see a movie, go out shopping with your wife, do things with your wife. There's, if I say that I had a regret, it was like when we first got in it, we went in full force. And I think a lot of these people do. And then all of a sudden every weekend they're going out into the woods and they're doing this. Nothing wrong with that. But then after a couple, 2 or 3 years, they're like, man, I need a break. Like us, I know what we do, especially me. Like this month is usually my month, end of November, December. Because people know I'm a big Christmas person, okay? We don't hardly do anything with cryptids then. We kind of try to detach from the whole subject, except maybe like talking for an hour.
You're right.
Or something. But we try not to take too many cases. But unfortunately, it's weird. It's like we get cases in November, and I'm like, man, why not in January when there's nothing to do? You know, even if it's cold, we'll go out. But definitely, right. I would like suggest, have a life, have fun too. And, nothing wrong. I don't want to go research Bigfoot in the woods. Take a walk in the woods. Take a hike. Go by a lake. Sit by a lake. Have fun with everything you do. If, they always say variety is the spice of life, right? I just think, have fun with your friends too. Just try not to. Sometimes we researchers lose themselves in going after the phenomena 100%. And it's like anything in life. You would get burned out. I mean, like you do your podcast. There's probably times you want to say, I want like 2 or 3 weeks off from the podcast because I want to go places. I want to. And I was asked numerous times about, why don't you do a podcast? Because I even had a couple people come to me and say, I'll sponsor you. I'm like, don't take this wrong. But to me right now, especially the stage of our life we're in, it would be like a job. Because let's say I had, you were on my podcast if I had one. I would do a lot of research on you, what you've done. I'd want to talk to you. I'd want to get questions. I would need to give the best possible interview from you. I don't want to miss anything. It's like, man, I forgot to ask her about this. And I always wanted to ask her. And it's research. And the thing is, people don't realize how much time, energy these podcasts are on. I've done over 60 podcasts. Okay. And then, people ask me, I usually go on, don't get me wrong, but I never go to somebody and say, hey, if you need somebody on a podcast, if you come to me, sure. That's awesome. I mean, I'm honored to go on any of these ones, believe me, but, that's what I can tell people. Just spice of life variety. Don't lose yourself. Don't lose your friends. Don't lose your family doing, burning yourself out. That's what I would say.
Did you ever look into a case that you were fully invested in, like the closest to burnout that you could have possibly got? Like, do you remember a case that just really snagged your attention to the point that you had to kind of step back a minute?
Probably not one, a series of cases. and I've talked about this before, I think even on the Ridge, a series of white Bigfoot cases down here in Beaver County, over in Columbiana County. And actually, there was two down here in Hancock, which we got those two off the internet. But there was a total, I believe, is about 11 white Bigfoot cases in the three-county tri-state area. And of white Bigfoot. And it could, and I've said, and I don't know for sure, it could be the highest concentration of white Bigfoot sightings. And I believe there was 11. I think Terry and I researched about seven of them ourselves. And we nicknamed him Whitey because he was about like 7 foot tall, and the descriptions almost matched to a T, except for one of them was actually 4 foot. Maybe it was a juvenile. And so probably that. It's like anytime I heard about or anything a white Bigfoot, it's like, yeah, we gotta go. It's like we gotta go see if we can find Whitey, you know. But that's probably the closest, probably to burnout. And then we also did the, you know, the Shenango Valley Werewolf when we believe we finished up the case, and Bill Rigby has his Penn Ohio conference, and Terry and I gave a presentation there last year, and it went over really well, and we kind of said it started with the dog boy, which we believe was a child with hypertrichosis, which is commonly called werewolf syndrome. You know, you have hair all over your body. And he had some physical ailments. He had an eye that was drooping and red. His hands were like cloves, the cloven hands. Mm-hmm. And we believe he moved from there. His family moved from there up to Erie, where they called him the Erie Wolf Boy. But the timeline fits in perfectly. So we think we actually closed that case. But the actual Shenango Valley Werewolf is a whole nother case completely, because this is a 6 to 7 foot tall, and I hate the werewolf looking creature. Now, I don't believe people can change into werewolves, things like that. But if somebody asked me what these dog men look like, they look like an upright wolf on two legs, almost look like a werewolf. I mean, when I say that, I'm like, oh, they're going to think I'm crazy. I remember when we first started to do this, how it started is Linda Gottfried had, and we lived in Mercer County for 3 years, which is a couple counties up from Beaver County. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at a book, American Werewolves. And no, Hunting the American Werewolf, I think that's what it was called, yeah. And I'm looking at it, and Terry was sitting there, and I had this look on my face. I'm like, and she's like, what's wrong? Did you know we lived in Mercer, and there was a Shenango Valley werewolf? It's like, what? She's probably thinking, oh my God, now he wants to go after werewolves. And nothing in our whole career or our whole time of researching anything was I totally flabbergasted and blindsided by this. And that was another one that we really started to get into. We went up there and talked to eyewitnesses, and it was just, I mean, we lived there for 3 years. We lived, you know, Grove City. I don't know if you know where Grove City is, right by the shops. We lived across from the shops, actually. And we found out it was later on. We were back to Hopewell by then. And I'm like, why didn't we hear this? Because we didn't really do that much research when we were up there, because my wife was an amateur. So we really didn't have time. But we talked to the locals, and we heard Bigfoot stories. We heard UFO stories when we were up there. Never a werewolf story. Never. And then we really pushed it. You know, Terry, Fred, and I went out and started giving presentations, and people started coming to us. I saw this thing. Look at this. And it's just our friend, Jamie and Jenny King, of course, actually found there. They actually found these really weird. Did you see those prints that they had?
I did not.
Some people said that if you, or maybe I can, you know, send them to you, or just really weird looking. Now, some people say, well, maybe it's a big dog. But I believe the biggest dog is the Brown Mastiff, I believe. I could be wrong about that. And I would have to look at a print of one of those things. But these things are pretty big. I'm not saying they're dog man or werewolf, but they're very odd looking, very, very huge.
All the places that you've investigated, is there one that stands out as like the creepiest place that you've been? I don't know if there's a specific forest or state park or something where when you get there, you're just uneasy. Have you ever experienced that?
Definitely. Our absolute all-time favorite is Beaver Creek State Park, and I've mentioned that to you before, I believe.
Yeah.
We we heard the, and I know you would know what the Ohio How is, right? You know, it's on the BFRO yes. website. We were, Terry and I were actually on that property. I was on there twice. She was on there once. And we know the gentleman who, Matt Moneymaker was on his property when he actually took. But he also has a very compelling, and I've explained this. I think I might even have showed you one of the stills, which it was grainy. But he got a, which looks like a, kind of like an ape-like face coming behind the tree. He had an infrared light, and he had some bait there. And it just went like this, and it started to sniff the tree, and then it went back. Real stealthily, if that's a word. Beaver Creek, we've heard the howls. We had a rock thrown at us from the ledge there by Hambleton's Mill. That's a creepy place. That the whole part, like down by Gretchen's Lock, and I know where all these places are, but if I could only ever research one place the rest of my life, that would be the place. I love that place. And I do believe there's, if something doesn't live down there, boy, it sure goes through there a lot. And we will go down there with you sometime. We can show you some of these places, but that's our favorite.
Yeah. And Beaver Creek has a whole assortment of stories. It's not just Bigfoot that's there.
Yeah, Gretchen, the ghost of Gretchen. Yeah, that's down there. There's been some UFO sightings right over the lock too. So,
what's the most spectacular UFO sighting that you've heard since you've been researching? Like a story that's actually come into you?
Well, the one I still think it's the one that me and Terry saw in '97. It was trick or treat night in Hopewell. We were at her mom's house, who they just live right up from the street from us. And we were finishing up trick-or-treating with our son, and we look up and we see two triangles, silent triangles going in the air, like above over here by the river. And they did like a X, like a crossing. They crossed twice and then they came over us. And the kids, all the kids and her mom and dad were just sitting there, you know, standing there watching these. Everybody was looking. And apparently we know somebody who knows somebody at the 911 in Aliquippa, and they were getting all kind of calls. What are these things? They just floated. They weren't up. They weren't that high up. And it had like one, two, three lights, one in the middle. And then a lot of like Christmas, almost like this Christmas tree here in my room here. And we're just looking. And it was like, that was the most, you know, weird thing. I mean, you know, we've seen a couple other things, but those two, if they were ours, I'm glad they were, you know, ours as in U.S. because they could have been hovering. You would not. No noise. I mean, there was no noise. We would have had the hearse.
How large were they?
Oh, my God. They were bigger, probably because we live by the airport, you know, up there in Hopewell. And probably the size of a little bit smaller, maybe in 747. They were big. They weren't these little drones. They were like, they were huge. And yeah, I just wish that we didn't have a cell phone then or anything, or to get. Right. Oh, that would have been fantastic. And I know a lot of other people saw it that night. Our friend Evelyn, she actually lived across the river, and she saw it from a different vantage point across the river, her and her son. And they said, did you see that? They called us. I said, yeah, did you see that? They drew what we saw, and it's like same thing. It was very exciting. It was 96. I think it was October 30th of 96.
That's awesome, especially to have multiple people seeing the same thing.
Yeah. And always, like, if you can get multiple eyewitnesses of a sighting, I talked to a gentleman a couple weeks ago who up in by Parker, which is in Butler County, they allegedly saw a dog man. Five eyewitnesses saw this dog man. They have like a little trailer camp. And there was, you know, they had a fire and they were sitting around the fire, and then they look and they see these two eyes. And the one gentleman who eyewitness I talked to, he gets his flashlight and he says this thing stood up. This threw some corn in a barrel, and this thing looked at him like kind of like saying, "What do you bother me? I'm eating." And it picked up the barrel. And just gave him a look like, you're bothering my dinner. And it turned around and then just ran into the woods. And five eyewitnesses of this. Now, we're going to be able to meet this guy in April, hopefully, once his camp opens back up. And I says, could we possibly get all five? him and four others, and it was his family members. And he said, yeah, that's very impressive if we can and get all of their stories. So again, and I asked him, I said, could you draw what it looks like? He says, if you've ever seen Harry Potter, that one professor who turns into a werewolf. Now, I was never a big fan of Harry Potter, even though my kids watched it, so I would have to watch it. But he says, it looked exactly like that, like a werewolf. And I guess a day or two after, he went down into, I think it's a town next to it called Bruin, or it's Bruin and Parker. It's like, why? Because they're right next to each other. And he went and asked one of these store owners, and he acted like it was a big deal. He goes, this has been reported around here for a while, just nonchalantly. And I'm like, wow. You know? So we'll be doing some more on that in the spring.
Yeah, that's exciting to get him to a place where the dog man is not not news, I suppose.
Yeah, it's weird. I like laughed. I'm like, really? You know, sometimes like we all act like Bigfoot's a big deal, which I still think it is. But there are some people, like, especially here in West Virginia, it's like, yeah, that's, you know, like Les O'Dell would probably tell you, Old Man of the Mountain, like his book. They like, oh yeah, we leave him alone. He leaves us alone. And remember, we're not in the wilds of West Virginia by any means. Okay, there's a lot of woods and stuff around us, but we're like 30 minutes from Pittsburgh. We're close to a lot. Although, yeah, there is a lot of woods and hills and stuff around that. We're not deep in West Virginia where, you know, where people are like, yeah, we've seen them up there, and it's no big deal with a lot of these people down here.
Mm-hmm. So, well, where you are currently, there are still some stories that, like, actual named creatures. Can you do a quick rundown of one of your local legends there?
Oh yeah, you know what's coming, right?
Yeah,
the Bell Hill Beast. I love that. So, how that started is our friend Fred Saluga. He's been down here about 14 years. Okay. So as soon as he came down here, and people start telling him, oh yeah, the Bell Hill Beast, the Beast of Bell Hill, the Bell Hill Beast. Well, what is it? He put out, what is it? And some people were saying, well, it was a Bigfoot. It was an alien. It was a big cat. Nobody really gave a description of it or what it was. So then we came down there, and I'm trying to think how this played out, because this was played out 2 years ago. I talked to one of the people down here from the Hancock County Park Commission, like, and he says, I know a sheriff reserve deputy who knows somebody who saw this thing. So I'm like, oh, can you please give me that? So I called this deputy, a reserve deputy. He's no longer one. He gave me the full story, and he gave me the guy's name. So he gave me the guy's name. I went down to the store, which that interview is on. It's called A Season of the Sasquatch. I think it's episode 5 of Mountain State Monsters, right?
Yeah.
We got him to interview his story. And that, I can't express how grateful we are that you guys came down and filmed him. Now, that's on film. That's the first time that anyone that we know of publicly talked about seeing this creature, which, you know, in the story, you know, he chases them. They go up to the top of this hill, because their little fort was destroyed, and they see this tree, and they see something peeking behind it. They go toward it. It's this ape-like creature, which he said was Bigfoot, and it chased them, and they go underneath this barbed wire fence. And that's kind of just like the Reader's Digest story. Well, watch the episode, Season of the Sasquatch, and you'll see a great interview. That's he was really excited, and he says, thank you very much. I finally got to tell my story, and I put it on the some of those local things down here. And of course, some people they laughed at it, they made fun of it, but a lot of people said, we really enjoyed that episode, and you can make sure you tell Seth that. I don't know if Seth listens or not, but yeah. They said it's great to hear the history, the paranormal history, which us and Fred are really trying to bring out down here. And it's working. It's slowly working, and we're excited. We're excited as hell about it. We really.
Now, you've also been going around giving presentations at different events and some. What's the craziest story that you've gotten while out and about? Like, actually at a presentation where people are hearing these stories and they know it's a safe place to come up and talk to you. What is some of the stories that really sticks out in your mind?
Tomlinson Run, A Bigfoot day. We've had two. We're going to have one next year. The guy came up to me and says, I saw this creature. It looked like the Jersey Devil. And it was the next county down, Brook County, but just barely across the line, like where the old hospital, where the hospital is now. It was down from the hospital and was woods. Now it's a little bit developed. He says that him and his son were walking in this field and they see this thing step out of the brush. Like, and he said it had, and I have a drawing of it. I just haven't printed it out to show anybody yet. But he said it looked like the Jersey Devil, kind of had this head, almost like a horse head. Because if you know, I know, obviously, you know the legend of the Jersey Devil, what it looked like. It had the horse head. It looked like a horse. It had wings and, you know, cloven hoofs and things like that. He says, mm-hmm. It looked like, and he drew it for me. And the head and the almost did look like it. Now, he didn't draw the full body, but the head and the wings. Now, we're going to meet up with this man. He actually has undergone a lot of operations. He's sick right now, but he's healing. Once he heals, he says, I'm going to take you right to the spot. I'll give you the whole story, because he did write a report about it. And we also got another winged entity report from Thomas and Ron, which it flew. It was this winged, like human, like entity that flew above their car. And we got that at Thomas and Ron the year before. So just by doing that, we're really pulling the reports out, and people also giving us some vague reports, but they, you know, oh, my father at the edge of the park, in the wintertime, he saw these prints, and we're starting to pinpoint more of where to go too. It's a long process. It really is. But down the road, maybe we can actually find something for it. But there's stories are out there, and give us a couple more years. I think we'll have a lot more. They've seen us now. They've seen Fred for years. They go to Fred now. They also come to us because, you know, Terry and I are getting our word out there too, which is good. We have two different sides, you know, and so it's, and we've also had some other Bigfoot stories too. Not a lot yet, like, you know, one crossed the road in Brook County. This was, right. was in 84, and one about 6 years ago outside of the Brook County Sportsman's Club, and the guy's hunting. He said it was dead quiet, even though it was early morning, too quiet, and he looks up and he sees this head, this conical head of this. It's like a dark brownish. It just kind of like moved and was right underneath the log. And then he moved and then it just went down, and then he heard scuffle and then it went away. He says his head was huge. It wasn't a deer. He said it was a conical thing. He said it was huge. It had to be the head of something. So we gave a little thing at the Brook County, Brook Hills Park. And we had about 45 people there listening to it. So it was cool. Nice. It was just... Yeah, a lot more to come. But wait, there's more, huh?
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's a good thing. So at the end of every episode, I always ask my guests to share a story with me. So you've been sharing some stories, but is there any story in particular that has just always kind of stuck with you over the years? It doesn't have to be Bigfoot, but it can be if that's the story that's sticking out in your mind right now. But any type of cryptid or UFO or paranormal story that you have received, or maybe even you experienced, that just really sticks with you. Could you tell us that story?
Well, probably this one would be a paranormal story. So Terry and I went up to this church up in Erie because our friend Robin was a pastor there. So he wanted us to come up, investigate it. And he said that there was a library upstairs of the church, that books would fly, kind of like Ghostbusters, books would fly out. They saw a shadow entity there, okay? So so we went, and he goes, I want to show you the basement. It was like you walk down these steps, and there was these two doors, and it was the door, it was kind of a door that had like the, it had like a handle coming out, and the bar doors, kind of like old school doors, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, you'd have to push it and it opened. Yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So we went in and made a left, and he goes, let me show you the old foundation of this church. So, and he says, here it is. And I said, well, you don't mind if I take a couple pictures. So I started taking pictures. Okay. And mind you, the church was locked down. This was about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. There was only him and one other person that had a key, but there was nobody in the church. We're taking pictures, and we hear somebody, sound like somebody was walking down the steps. All of a sudden the door starts shaking. It went, I'm like, do you hear that? Somebody's there. And he said that it's locked down. The church's locked down. So I ran up, I opened the door, nothing. I ran up the steps. You run up the steps and you go in the room and then you got the chapel, you know, the rest of the church. I looked through there, nothing. Doors were locked. But no, we heard footsteps and that door started shaking. And we were just like looking at each other. And the other one, I got to say this other one real quick, is Terry and I were investigating this. It was a house. It was in Rochester. We were with an old ghost group. And Terry was with the other lady and the homeowner, the woman. So me and the gentleman were standing outside. And they had this plastic pool. Okay. And it was like filled with water. It was like water was like here. And then this is the pool. So I'm standing there about 10 feet away from the pool with him. We're talking. And all of a sudden, that pool, it was like a plastic, but it was a thick, you know, like a plastic you had to blow up, but it was big and thick. There, a V started to happen. It was like this, almost like somebody's pushing that down. So the V goes all the way down below the water level and water starts gushing out. And we're just looking at each other and it probably gushed out for about 6-7 seconds. Then it went up like that. Something. That's and cool. It wasn't me and him because we're looking at each other like, did you see that? There's no way that something, and there was no kids at that pool at the time. They were inside and nothing was there. And we were probably, like I said, maybe 10 feet from it. And it just went down like this and the water started gushing out then just as in maybe 4 or 5 seconds, 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 or 5. And then it went. And then the water stopped. I still don't know how to explain that because there's no way that pool where it didn't deflate because it was perfectly after that water come gushing out. What did it? I mean, it was like so weird. It was like it was exciting, but it's just like,
yeah,
wow, you know. So yeah, that was, you know, you would think cryptids, but you know, we heard the Ohio Howl, you know, but we've never. And we had a rock thrown at us at Beaver Creek and also at Salt Fork. And I think I talked to you about, we thought we were kind of getting zapped, as they call it, because we walked, mm-hmm. We went to the, where was it? The handicap area. And some of our members were there. This was during a conference, but Terry and I, Dave Rupert gets out. We had separate cars. As soon as we walked, we closed the doors. We all stopped and something hit us. It was like, we looked at each other and we all said, something's off right away. You felt this intense dread. Okay. We walked to the, where our other people were underneath that enclave there. And we, as soon as we got there, we didn't even talk to them. They said, something's off. Something's off. So Dave and I walked and we got our equipment. We walked up and down probably for about 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. And then it was like a light switch went off. It was like, okay, it feels good. Nothing's wrong. And they talk about that getting zapped. Honest to God, if you were there, you would have felt that intenseness. I've never felt that intense. Like something hit us. Like something was, again, we didn't hear anything. Didn't see anything. Didn't smell anything. And I do tell that to people. I'm like, listen, there was no proof. We had a parabolic. We had walked up and down where we felt nothing. But man, you did not want to be there.
It still got your attention.
Oh my. I mean, and we've been out plenty of times and nothing. But that time, you know, that one specific time, it was like very intense. And
it's wild.
Again, we can't say it was Bigfoot. We didn't see it. We did not see anything.
Right.
But why the hell was that so intense there for us? You know?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, thank you so much for spending time on the show and taking time out of your evening to talk with me. This has been awesome.
Anytime. You know how I get in touch with me. I thank you again. I do want to thank, you know, all you guys for what you do, not just with the things you've done with us, what you do, you've put a face to the cryptid world and now other things that you do. And believe me when I tell you how, like, it's funny that, like, it's funny, even like me, like I went, the last place we went to Cabela's, I had a couple people come up. I saw you in that small town once because you did a great job. I'm like, thanks. That was cool. Cause I didn't do it for that. I did it to get the word out about the group and to have people come up to you. that's a testament to you guys too, to be honest with you. I mean, because you're putting out good work. If you didn't put up good work, people wouldn't be giving you all those compliments. So that's, you should feel good. All ends. I mean, seriously.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Can you let our listeners know how they could get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can go on either. We have two Facebook pages, Center for Unexplained Events and Center for Cryptozoological Studies. You can just message us there with any encounters, or just hit up my page, Brian Siege. You'll see my dorky face there, and me and my wife are there. And just message us there, and we'll get back to you. And that is really the lifeblood of what we do, is for people to give us these encounters. I mean, we don't get as many as other groups. We just don't. We don't like hammer people like, hey, come to us. We should more, but we do things a little differently, a little more in the background. And you guys kind of can see how we work. And mm-hmm. maybe we should be more to get more, but I don't know if that's in our DNA to be out in front of everybody's face all the time. I just don't know.
You know? Yeah. Well, it may be a turnoff for some people as well.
Yeah, that's true. But people got to know you're out there too, which was why we still do it. And like doing those couple things with you guys, it's really, when people walk up to you, hey, were you on this? Oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, it's like, I'm glad you liked what I did. I mean, I don't want to sound like a fool, like when I'm on those, you know, but I'm also, I want to be me. And like I tell people,
right.
what you see on there, and you, this is what we are. This is what we're like. I'm a big goofball too. I mean, you know, I love my sci-fi and my monsters. And even though I'm almost 60, I'm not changing that for anybody. You know, that's me, you know?
Yes. It's perfect. Well, everybody that's listening or watching, for squad members, if you need to get in touch with me, you can email me, heather@smalltownmonsters.com. I do want to remind everybody that we have a Kickstarter coming up in February. February 1st, our Kickstarter starts. And I cannot emphasize enough how important the Kickstarter success is to the success of Small Town Monsters. So watch our social media, be ready, mark your calendars, February 1st, Kickstarter. And then also, if you're in the area, and Brian was around for this too, we have Monster Fest 2 coming up.
Oh,
Brian
awesome.
Came to first Monster awesome. Fest.
We should be there. So, nothing goes wrong. Yeah.
Yay!
It was so much good. Fun. It was so much fun. Anybody who's listening who wasn't there, oh, you missed a great show. I mean, everybody was just so cool and it was fun. No egos there. It's just, yeah. just great. I mean, whoever's listening and didn't go, make sure you're there this year.
Yes,
and make sure you support the Kickstarter programs. They're yes, they're bringing
thank you.
They're bringing you guys fantastic information that a lot of people wouldn't know if it weren't for you guys. And keep up great work, seriously.
Thank you. Well, that's it for the show. And until next time, guys.
The Lore You Know is presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about this and other network shows, as well as Small Town Monsters films, books, our upcoming Kickstarter campaign, and much more at smalltownmonsters.com. If you enjoyed this show, consider giving it a like, rating, review, or sharing it with a friend. And be sure to tune in next time for another episode of The Lore You Know.